Yay, we're here with the multi-talented, multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, genius, and producer responsible for so many good things. It's crazy, including my all-time favorite legendary band, 11, which
Thank you.
consists of yourself, your musical partner and partner in life, and one of the greatest voices of our time, Natasha Schneider, who unfortunately is no longer with us on Earth, and a couple of really good drummers like Jack Irons. And we're going to talk about the 20th anniversary of 11's final studio recording, Howling Book. Tell us about that first
Yes.
20 years. Hard to
Yeah,
believe.
I know. Well, it's amazing how the time's just flying. I mean, it was a really special time for us because Jack left for a while. You know, after our third record, Thunk, he joined Pearl Jam, and we found this amazing drummer named Greg Upchurch, who ended up spending the Avant-Garde Dog period with us, and also when we toured for opening for Soundgarden in '96. And then also he was a member of the Euphoria Morning Band, you know, the Chris Cornell solo record that Natasha and I produced. You know, there was a period after we did a bit of touring as 11 with additional members, with Rick Markman on bass, which we never had a bass player before. It was always Natasha's left hand playing the bass, you know, Moog. And Greg Upchurch, because we were just so hot off the Euphoria Morning tour with our beautiful chemistry and friendship that we decided to do some shows. So we had just met Queens of the Stone Age because we were both on Interscope after we were on A&M, but Avant-Garde Dog came out on Interscope A&M because we did it before Euphoria Morning, but it came out after because they asked us to hold it off so we could tour with Chris. And then there was a little bit of a lull there in the early 2000s. We told Greg, you know, feel free to do whatever you need to do because we're just working on production and things like that. So Greg joined Puddle of Mud, so that he went off doing amazing things, eventually Three Doors Down, and Jack had left Pearl Jam, so now Jack was free again. You know, Jack and I started when we were kids, when we were like 14 years old. Hello, Slovak Jack and I at the Bancroft Junior High and then Fairfax. So Jack was the core original DNA of 11 as drummer. Greg did an amazing job for Avant-Garde Dog and stuff, and he played the old songs amazingly well. But Jack, Natasha and I is really the energy triumvirate, you know, the triangle. So he came back. In the early 2000s, we had just started doing Desert Sessions, and we're part of, Natasha, we're part of Songs for the Deaf. And so we were kind of like really in this creative space and so excited that Jack was back. So Howling Book came about in like 2002. We started the sessions at 11 AD, our home studio, recorded that album literally in this joyful, connected, amazing space. And it came out, we put it out ourselves. You know, we'd been on labels and no one really promoted it properly. And we couldn't possibly mess it up worse than any other label. So we did it all in-house and we printed some digipacks. And then Natasha and I were part of the Queens of the Stone Age tour. So we didn't get to play any shows after that as 11. And we were hoping to. So now, you know, obviously, you know, Natasha got sick. And before she got sick, we recorded some material that was going to be the next record. And it's just sitting here. There are five songs that don't have vocals that are amazing that hopefully I get to finish. So Howling Book now is 20 years has passed, and Jack has been making solo records, and a lot of them come out in this amazing label called ORG, Org Music. And so he suggested, let me talk to Andrew and see what we can, you know, if he's into doing a 20-year anniversary release, you know. And he was really excited about it. And the thing was that we had these songs that were recorded around the same period, but they weren't really part of the record. Not that we excluded them. They were just right before and right after. You know, one of them, This Little Finger, we had released later as a single, along with a Stevie Wonder cover that we did at Cole Rehearsal Studios, and one of the B-sides from Thunk that was unreleased, you know, because when Jack left for Pearl Jam, we took four tracks off that he had played on, and we added Nat Cameron to four songs on Thunk, like Why and Seasick of You and Took Me for a Ride. First of all, Howling Book digitally is 50 minutes long, a little over, right? So that's too long for vinyl. So we thought, wait a minute, what if we add these three songs and make it a double down? The lengths of each side allow for the highest possible quality for vinyl. Because, you know, you can go 22 minutes a side, maybe, and then it starts to suffer bottom end, et cetera. So that's what we did. So side four has the three bonus tracks, which are Rosebleed, Took Me for a Ride, and This Little Finger. We're super proud of it, super, super excited and happy that it's finally out on vinyl. Because the only other 11 record that's on vinyl was the very first one, which isn't even streaming. The labels disappeared, and whoever can find 11 Awaken a Dream on vinyl is very lucky because they're just sitting out there somewhere on Discogs.
It's so cool. So cool. and vinyls. So it's making a comeback.
Yeah, exactly. It's really like the only way for a lot of bands to make some money from their music when they're going on tour and they sell the vinyl. All my solo records are on vinyl, and I want to start collecting again. It'll be my third time collecting, you know, because I had my first collection got stolen from a van. Second collection, when I moved out of LA and put everything in storage, I got rid of some and whatever. This is a very exciting release for us and stoked about that. And I can't wait for new fans to discover the music through listening on vinyl, because it sounds really amazing.
I can't wait to get my hands on it. I'm waiting for my copy. And so let's talk about this video. Liam Lynch, your friend, the famed director, producer. He's worked on so many cool things too. Tenacious D videos. My kids call him the United States of whatever guy.
Yeah, I love that. And the goat rap and Holy Rollers. Well, Liam is a bit of a genius. He's a bit of an incredible person, friend, super creative, multi-instrumentalist, visual artist, you know, amazing sense of humor. First time we met was in the Burn the Witch, a little before that, with, you know, always, he was friends with Josh. He had directed Pick of Destiny, you know, the movie with Tenacious D with Jack and Kyle. Dave Grohl was in there playing the devil, and it's an amazing movie. It's a cult classic, really. The Burn the Witch video he directed, Natasha and I played villagers. So we had a long friendship and history, had a really deep connection to us and our music and Natasha. He's done amazing videos for Queens of Stone Age, Royal Blood, his own, different artists. So I reached out to him because I wanted something special about this, not just a vinyl re-release, but we hadn't had any videos since the 90s, you know, since a couple of videos from 11-11, which I reached out. Randy Sinicolas directed that, and Kevin Kerslake directed Crash Today. Liam had done my If Morning Comes video, and he has this amazing way of just, he being totally autonomous, you let him run with it. He creates everything. He acts in it. He creates the visuals, the concepts, and everything. And so I basically reached out as a friend, and I told him the idea, and I asked him to pick the song, you know, leave it to him to, you know. Long story short, he had a connection with Natasha, and she kind of informed him in dreams, in his mind, in his subconscious, that it should be No, I Know. And then he told me, and I thought, you know, that's an incredible idea. It's such a beautiful piece of music. Her voice is so amazing. And there's a deep mystery, and there's a sadness and a beauty to the song, too. And lyrically, it's very poignant and deeply spiritual and philosophical, I feel. It's got such amazing textures also sonically. And I was so curious. And he basically just personified the song visually. Like, I could never have imagined. Like, there's such incredible, intense, heavy beauty in the end result. And you can sense him as the filmmaker and protagonist too. You can sense him emotionally deeply involved with the making of it. You know, it was heavy for him, you know, and intense. And that comes across. I'm just absolutely overwhelmed with how incredible this video is and what incredible work of art he's achieved and how much of himself he put into it, you know?
It is. It's so beautiful. How would you describe the meaning of it? I'm sure it means different things to different people. But you said he knew Natasha and he understood.
Yes, without any spoilers. There's a lot of little beautiful symbolism happening. The Russian dolls, you know, kind of trying to get into the heart, breaking away layers of an onion. And then at the end, you're left with pure light or just like no form at all. So like, it's almost like the source of everything is pure light in the sense that, you know, we're kind of here. The lyric has this kind of like, not sad, but a sailing to forever gates, you know, but also speaks of a kind of like a sense of something magical beyond, without taking away from the mourning of the loss of the physical realm, you know, whether it's losing loved ones or, you know, just the crazy intensity of physical existence. And it's not like hopeful in a silly way. It's like kind of a deep wisdom of understanding that it's just too magical and impossible to just be for nothing and, you know, just a chemical accident or waste or whatever. So in the end, even though there's a heaviness there, there's also like a feeling of like an awe about whatever this is, you know, not only what we're experiencing, but also what magical forces are behind our experiences, you know, and love being at the central part of it. Because I think the feeling of love is this feeling of wanting to fuse with what you love. Also, someone loves you, then, you know, the hug is a tight hug. So it's almost like you're trying to meld into a unity, you know, and where you kind of get rid of form and illusion, basically become a being, or just being in a pure sense, you know. And so it's funny because in the quantum realm, often the interpretation spiritually is that light as the basis, when it slows down, makes matter. And what could be more unified, it's just, there's no content, it's just is, you know, but it also creates everything in a sense. or at least in the, if you explain that physically in physics terms, so, which is always cool, you know, to just observing nature and science and stuff. It's a lot of evidence of something awesome beyond all this, you know, and that kind of sense of wonder and mystery and magic is definitely alive in this video and in the song originally, because it's they're analogs to each other. Like I said, he embodied the song in a visual form. You know, somehow he created that. I mean, it really, down to just all the motions, like Jack's doing the snare brushes and it feels like ocean and breathing and the walking and then the motions of things, you know, the sailing. And well, I mean, again, it's just, you have to see it.
Let's talk about Natasha's incredible voice. There's nothing like it. Best voice of our generation, but really any generation I could think of. I think she just had magical, incredible, nothing like it.
I know. I totally 100% agree with you. And I think one of my big missions, being left standing after so many of my dearest ones are gone, is to continue somehow reminding or pointing at this incredible, because you know what it's like throughout centuries, incredible artistry gets lost or forgotten because it's not part of the popular thing. And sometimes it gets discovered. The crazy thing about 11, even though, you know, it was so long ago, keeps getting discovered by newer generations, even though there's no like real push, you know, from anywhere. There's not like a massive this or that or the other. There's just humble, beautiful things like this reissue. There's fans that post things and like Nerkon and Mariano, you know, that have been spending decades like working hard to remind people about how great a band we were, you know, and are in terms of listening to the music. And Natasha just had this from day one, from the first time we met and I heard her sing. There's a technical side, there's all this other stuff, but there's something about certain singers like Natasha and Mark Lanigan and Chris Cornell. So much of their experience and so much of their way of looking at the world is so much of pure, you know, music channeled inside the tone. So they can sing just a simple phrase, but something about the way that it communicates, it goes right through you. It drives the story into you, the lyric, the texture. I mean, textually, Natasha's voice is so incredible. I remember when we met Frank Zappa, we became friends and he would invite us all the time. He often would ask Natasha to come over whenever he had a new microphone because he thought that her voice, her texture was so completely unique and so completely otherworldly that he always wanted to hear it in the context of whatever new microphone or, you know, whatever stuff, which I thought was really cool. No, I Know and Howling Book, Strands of Rain. There's a bit of that kind of Slavic mourning, bluesy, gospel-y feeling because she grew up with Aretha and Stevie Wonder, but also her mom, Larissa Chercova, was a very, very incredible singer that performed for audiences without a PA, you know, like thousands of people in an amphitheater. And she had the most insane dynamic voice. So I think she got a lot of that from her mother. When La Scala would come to the Soviet Union, they would show off Natasha's mom to the Italian singers to say, okay, that's cool, but we got this woman right here, you know. She embodies a lot of our human frailty, suffering, joy, everything. That's why I think it's so moving to hear her sing. It's not just like, oh, cool, you know, cool song, cool melody, cool singer. There's something more there.
A lot more. Just talking about it, I get goosebumps, really. Not even paying attention to the words, just the sound of it. Just literally,
exactly.
I literally start crying. Really, every time when I play Howling Book, for example.
Yeah.
That's literally one of the... just makes me well up immediately. I'm not even thinking about the words. Forget that. That's just...
No, yeah. It's true. It's true. Yeah. It's one of the heaviest experiences listening to her voice, for sure.
Well, let's talk about the video. Life Minute is so excited to co-premiere the video with you guys.
Yes. I'm so excited about that, too. I want everyone to see it. It deserves to be seen and heard, obviously. Yes, we're premiering it this Thursday, right? The 11th of January, which is 1/11. And by the way, 1/11/2024, if you add those all together, you get 11. And it's going to be at 11/11, but in time zone, depending. The YouTube link is one choice, and then you're going to premiere it, too. And it's going to be great because I think it's going to be quite a nice audience ready to enjoy. It's going to be up for people to come back to, because it's not just a one-time video, is it?
I can't wait to see it, and I'm so excited.
Yeah. And then there's going to be links to Orgy Music to get the vinyl if you're into the song. First time listening to the song, and it's a beautiful record. I'm very proud of it all this time. 20 years have passed just like that. So much has passed since then. It's crazy. But, you know, I feel really proud of what we've done, of Jack. I'm proud of Natasha, proud of me, and Greg Upchurch, too.
It's a masterpiece. Oh, like all you. The 11 albums and everything you do, actually.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.